Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is one of an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Over the past 10 years, Richmond's cultural art scene has been quietly growing, attracting numerous talented artists with national and international reputations. Every Friday at 12:30, we'll sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these artists. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we're having lunch with Andres Baladi. Welcome, Andres, to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
One of the things I find interesting about you, you have absolutely no accent. You sound like you grew up in the Midwest.
Right.
But that's not quite the case, is it?
No, it's not. I grew up in Richmond, but my parents are both from Budapest, Hungary.
Right.
So I have had a lot of access to that culture.
Right.
And I like it. I like to go there and travel there as much as I can.
How often do you get there?
Probably every 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Where'd you go last?
We were in my wife's family. Her parents came from Croatia. So we were actually visiting her mother-in-law, my mother-in-law, her mother, in Zagreb in September.
Wow.
And then we went to Budapest as well and stayed for a few days. I had a little piece in a show in Budapest. So
what was going on with your family when all of that horror was going on over there?
Well, my mother's family left Hungary at the end of World War II.
Right.
As the Russians were coming, a lot of Hungarians were leaving. And she managed to make her way eventually to Richmond. She worked as an interpreter. She was working as an interpreter for American court system.
Mm-hmm.
As a young girl, she was 20. And there was an article in the paper about a man who lived in Richmond who had a small import-export tobacco business. And my grandfather made her write him a letter and ask for a job out of the blue. And she wouldn't do it. No, she wouldn't do it. She hesitated. And then finally my grandfather wrote him in Hungarian. But the man didn't respond. He didn't really speak Hungarian. His parents had come from Hungary. So anyway, so then she finally did write him in English and wrote him a letter. And he said, "You got a job. I'll sponsor you to come to America." So she came to Richmond, Virginia.
Wow.
I think in
something good comes out of tobacco.
Right. Something good comes out of it. I think in 1949, I can't remember the exact date, but eventually her parents came over. And then my father was in Hungary, Budapest, and then he left in 1956 during the Russian Revolution. And he didn't know anyone in America, but I think that America let... It was a little bit slacker for Hungarians coming out of that situation. Mm-hmm. That I think they let him come without a sponsor. I'm not exactly sure, maybe not. But anyway, he came. He had a friend who was coming to Richmond, so he came to Richmond. My mother was helping resettle these refugees, and that's how they met. And,
But the most recent kinds of events have been happening there.
Well, fortunately, nothing too horrible has happened. I think things have really stabilized. 1989 was when it became a democracy.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was 1989. I might be wrong. Yeah. Maybe it was 91, somewhere in that area. Anyway, and I think things have steadily been getting better in Hungary.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you speak Hungarian?
I speak it pretty well.
Do you?
Yeah. I don't speak it perfectly, but I try to keep up my Hungarian.
Okay. Now, as far as your work goes, the kind of work that that you do, obviously this is the radio, so people can't see it, so we're not going to get into discussion about it. But talk about sort of where you started with making art. Why did you start
making
art?
Yeah. Well, I was one of those kids who were I was probably 10 and I was, copying the covers of books and magazines. Mm-hmm. And I was really, that's how I like to spend my time. I like to draw and paint by numbers. I remember as a little kid,
really?
I was obsessed with paint by numbers and you just paint. I love the smell of paint.
Yeah.
And I would paint everything. I'd paint my bike, my wagon. I remember my brother getting Max. I painted his wagon one time. I thought it would look really nice with some designs on it. Classic radio flyer.
Right.
And he didn't like it a bit. But anyway, so I really just all along was very interested in paint. And
I mean, that's one of those things you can't really explain.
You really can't explain, yeah.
Right.
I remember I had a little shed in the backyard that, an adult really couldn't even get into, but I had kind of set up as my studio. I had put I had put windows in it, you know, so I could kind of close it off from the elements. And I would go in there and paint little things. It was.
Did you like the smell of paint?
I love the smell of paint.
Yeah.
I love the smell of paint. All my clothes.
When I was a kid, I loved the smell of wood.
Yeah.
You know, something about it. I don't know what it was. It was something, just the smell of it. If someone hasn't experienced it, it's hard to understand, I think.
Right.
Okay, so there you were, 10 years old, cloistered in your in your first studio, wailing away.
Right.
What did your parents think of this?
You know, my parents were always very supportive of anything that we did. My brothers and I, what we did. You know, one brother is a policeman, and the other one works for the National Park Service. So, growing up, we were all just encouraged to and allowed to pursue our interests. So. Right. They never, I remember I was enrolled in art classes and, you know, they encouraged me to try to.
They saw the interest.
And supported it.
Anybody else in your family an artist?
I have a great, great uncle who's a very famous Hungarian painter who died in 1919. His name was Csontváry. And he's one of Hungary's big contemporary. He was sort of a contemporary painter, sort of a post-impressionist.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, is his work in any of the museums here or over there? Or?
It's not in the museums here, but it's in all the museums in, I'm sure several in Europe, but certainly in Hungary, Budapest.
Has his work influenced you at all?
You know, I don't know. I have been looking at his work since the first time I went to Hungary was in 1982.
Right.
When I was after my first year of art school at VCU, and I saw his paintings and knew there was a distant family connection. And every time I go back, I see his work. And I think there must be some kind of a influence.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like painting chose you or you chose painting?
Well, I think that painting chose me because I was in a situation where I was fortunate enough to allow myself to be chosen.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm sure if I was living in a country where economically it was just not an option.
Right.
I probably would not. I mean, I don't know. I think I have a real sense of sort of responsibility and duty. So I don't think I would have let myself be a destitute painter trying to support a family in some situation that's not a good idea to do that in.
Yeah.
I was always impressed by Dubuffet.
Uh-huh.
Who, you know, in the beginning of World War II, apparently he was a pretty wealthy wine merchant, his family, and then he just quits doing that and starts painting in the middle of World War II. And Matisse, you know, and all those guys, and Picasso and Monet, they're all Monet painting all through World War II, and his work is, you know, totally uninfluenced by these horrible things happening around him. I always found that impressive, how they could just focus and you know, keep
you found that
on.
Impressive. That's interesting.
I found
why?
That impressive.
Why?
Just because they just knew what was important and they focused on it and they just.
But wasn't World War II important?
World War II was very important, but somehow, I don't know, just to be able to just shut it out and keep painting. Like painting is somehow, I mean, ultimately
transcendent too.
Yeah,
or?
I think so. I think ultimately, you know, in another 100 years, maybe. Hopefully there won't be too many terrible wars, any wars between now and then. But ultimately, I think Matisse's paintings are going to be, or Monet's paintings are going to have a bigger relevance in contemporary society, wherever that, you know, in 100 years, than what happened in World War II.
Really?
I think.
Why?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think because we as humans have a lot of really bad qualities.
Right.
And, unfortunately, they keep popping up.
Okay.
And they pop up.
And then simplest terms, the conflict between good and evil.
Yeah.
The fact that someone can tune out the horrors and the evil and focus on beauty, on transcendence, on the spirit. Is that what you're saying?
That sounds very close to what I'd like to say. Yeah.
Yeah, that someone was able to, because you would think, you know, you've got this war going on, you know, why aren't they painting about the war?
Right.
You know, don't artists generally paint about...
Yeah, I mean, Picasso certainly painted about the war.
He sure did, yeah.
But,
But that... Is that important in your work, that kind of...
It is very important.
That kind of, I don't know, what do we call this? Transcend?
I
don't want to...
I call it, I think I...
I don't want it to sound like that you're detached.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, well, I'm not paying any attention.
I'm definitely paying attention, but I think what I like to pay attention to is, why can't we pay attention and be focused on positive things? You know, I had a friend, an artist friend once, said, Andy, I want you to paint someone doing something bad to someone else. You know, he was joking, but he was sort of serious.
Right.
And, you know, I feel like, you know, basically every primetime TV show is focusing on some child being abducted, a woman being raped, someone being killed, or, you know, it's just, and we're sort of fascinated by it. And then, you know, the news, you watch the local news, it's the newest killings, it's all we're hearing about, and obviously the war. So, I don't know if it's that good in all the video games, which I don't never have played, but apparently they're pretty violent. I feel like there's so many things that if we just calm down and pay attention to, there's a lot of shared beauty that we could experience.
Is there a religious influence in your work?
I don't know.
Not in the sense of like house religion.
Right. I mean, I grew up in a Catholic school. I went to Catholic schools, and you know, I was always impressed with the story. You'd get these little parables we'd get once a week about, you know, and even
mimeograph parables.
Yeah,
good to smell.
Right. Even like even when I was a kid growing up, you know, Charlie Brown was there was a moral to the story, you know, and Gomer Pyle and Beverly Hillbillies. I mean, don't behave this way because this is what happens. But I feel like we've kind of lost that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like now it's all about entertainment. You know, I love Seinfeld, right? But it's all about entertainment. You know.
Right.
Friends. It's about entertainment. It's about beauty, you know, beauty in a superficial sense.
Yeah.
So I feel like we've somehow gotten off track from sort of discipline and focus.
Yeah.
And paying attention and doing the right thing.
Yeah, because doing the right thing takes a tremendous amount of discipline and focus.
Yeah.
If you're not talking about it in a banal way.
Right.
You know, kind of like most people walk around and go, well, you know, I've never really hurt anybody. I kind of, you know, I'm a pretty good guy. I don't bother anybody much. But doesn't that leave a lot of room for the other guys who do, you know?
Well, if the guy who is just walking and saying, I'm doing pretty good, you know, I kind of feel like that's me, too. I don't feel like I'm too, you know, doing too much to help. I probably could do a lot more. I certainly could do a lot more. But I think... You know, crime disturbs me a great deal. You know, the idea that it's okay to take and hurt other people disturbs me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just feel
so
like...
So you leave that up to your brother to deal with him?
I leave that up to my brother.
He's a policeman.
That, right. I feel like...
We got it covered in my family. We got a policeman.
Right.
We got an artist.
Yeah.
And we got a... What was the other one?
He's works for the National Park
in the National
Service.
Parks.
Yeah, National Parks.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
So you got nature covered, crime covered, and aesthetics.
Well, I think that... We're a little obsessed with having things that maybe you can only have if you have a lot of money.
Right.
But if you just get on your bike, you know, a used bike to the thrift store and ride to the park.
Right.
It's such a, you can see so many beautiful things, and it feels good and it's good for you. So I feel like there's so many things that we can do as humans.
Has art helped you do that? Has art helped?
I think art has
chicken and egg
me.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you think you came out of the womb sort of being able wired to be able to get on a bike and have that real deep, rich appreciation? Or do you think that you were able to get to that because the way painting has almost forced you to look at the world and what it has to offer?
I think the painting has helped me a great deal because I tell you why, because, you know, I might have this bicycle riding experience, you know, simple riding the bike and it's just so personal. And it's like, I'm on my bike by myself. And you know, you go home, you tell someone, I had this great bike ride.
Right.
You know? So who cares? No one can experience that.
Right.
But that's basically what my paintings end up being about, is a walk in the park or bike ride. Or I see something that makes me think, that's such a archetypal experience someone's having there. But on the surface, it looks like they're just walking in a ditch. But really, what does it really signify? And it's a bike riding or sort of a pedestrian experience, right? But then
could
I make a painting about
experience.
It. Could be a pedestrian experience.
Right.
Could be.
Right.
But then I go, but that's what
so
makes
you
want to
are
paint.
Are you dealing with the extraordinary and the ordinary?
Yeah. I think that's exactly what I'm trying to deal with.
Right.
And that sort of also sometimes comes to the religious, like, is there religion in there? And I sometimes think that maybe there is something saying this, you need to pay attention to this, mm-hmm. because there's something there that is deeper than what appears to be there on the surface.
Well, you mentioned the one about a ditch, and you showed me a painting this morning of of a couple with a baby carriage, I think.
Yes.
And they're, and you know, you would think, you know, well, this is a people strolling through a field of, and you said, you know, that's the ditch between Lowe's and Walmart.
Right.
Right.
And it is. So that's actually.
But it ain't at all.
It ain't at all. Exactly. Right. But it, in the one hand, like, I was literally in the Lowe's parking lot, and there's this young couple pulling this baby stroller through this, you know, ravine. Right.
Uh-huh,
and,
right.
And it's just like, God, that, you know, that doesn't make you stop and think, like, what's going on? You know, it's just, to them, it was obviously a very natural, normal experience or thing to do, but it just seems so, you know, and you start to think about young families, and you see them in trouble, and young families trying to raise their kids, you know, and this family obviously doesn't have a car.
Right.
You know, they probably wouldn't be pulling that thing through that ditch, but then, you know, maybe they shouldn't even be in Lowe's and Walmart parking lot to begin with. You know, maybe they ought to be.
So do you see a connection between you and... Is there a poetry to what you're doing?
Well,
maybe that's not a fair question to ask a painter, but
yeah, that's a tough question. I think of my paintings as I think of a good writer, so a poet. I have a hard time when I read a book. I can say, "Oh, I think this is a good writer." When I read a poem, I'm not so sure if I can. I don't feel comfortable saying this is a good poem or a bad poem. So a way a person that uses words. Mm-hmm. The way they use words, I really have an appreciation for the skill, the craft, the nuance.
Right.
And I try to make my paintings that way too. Like a little bit of information may lead to a greater thing. A little bit of color, you know. Uh-huh. So you know, it's I like to. I just had a really bizarre experience. I was watching an interview on TV. Right. I read The Brothers Karamazov about 2 years ago. I thought it was a great story. I thought it was about these three brothers. In the interviews, we're talking about how the one brother is supposed to be Jesus, and he's in jail, and I had no idea. I mean, I'm fascinated how I can read a book, love it, but I totally missed the point.
Right.
So I kind of want my paintings to be that way, too. Like, I'd love for someone to look at this painting of the family in the ditch and say, that's a nice little painting. I like the way those colors are working. It's odd. I don't really get what it's about, but I like it. So I respect.
How important is that to you to have someone get it? Because when I look at that painting.
Yeah.
First of all, your work is representational, sort of. What would you call it? It's not impressionistic, but it has impressionistic qualities.
Impressionistic, you know, we all I think anyone painting today gets a little embarrassed when someone calls them impressionist, but people often call me impressionistic. But I consider my work, to quote Gary Stefan, referential. So
representational, but it
references.
I only say that because I lack the vocabulary.
Right.
It's clearly not impressionistic.
Anyone who's not in the arts, like hasn't studied art, been in art school, I think very comfortably would call my work impressionistic, and they would not for a second think that's, you know, a put down. And it's not a put down, but I think as an artist, we're always trying to be, we always think of ourselves as being very contemporary, or we hope we are anyway. Mm-hmm. And impressionism happened 100 years ago, so, you know, 120 years ago. So, you know, but yeah, but the impressionists, I guess in all fairness, the impressionists did deal with light.
Well, how about blurry photorealism?
Blurry photorealism. Yeah, that's...
I'm teasing. There's nothing.
So my impressions painting, I think primarily, I think it's fair to say, you know, we should get some more art historian here, but I think it's fair to say they worked outdoors in natural light. And
do you always do outdoor paintings?
And I don't, right.
Oh,
so
okay.
My paintings are not outdoors at all, and my paintings are actually all done in the studio. But all my drawings, which my paintings come from, are done outdoors on location.
It's very interesting. You talk about technique, and you talk about discipline, and you talk about those... sort of very kind of, some people say, you know, sort of antiquated concepts.
Right.
You know, that, you know, the rules as opposed to there are no rules. And yet your paintings somehow don't reflect that.
Interesting.
You know? I mean, I don't look at this and say, here's someone who's really focused on discipline or control or... I mean, they really are very fluid in a way, you know, when
well,
you look at them.
I think that...
Is that a shock?
No, that's not a shock. I mean, I feel good about that. I take that as a compliment.
I mean, maybe what you've done is taken... Do you know someone who learns how to play the cello?
Right.
They have to practice,
yeah.
Right?
And yeah.
At first, it's halting and stilted.
Right.
And at some point, they become enormously proficient, but then it becomes boring. And then something transcendent happens.
Right.
It transcends the discipline. Do you feel like that's what's happened in your work?
I do. And I really like the music analogy because I have been trying to play the guitar since I was 10. And I still don't know a song,
still,
you know.
Still can't.
So I really have an appreciation. Like, I can see someone who can play the guitar, you know. And, you know, I have appreciation for that. And I do feel very comfortable with paint. And I know I'm not, you know, a master painter, but I know I can paint well enough if I keep trying to convey what I'm trying to convey.
But there is something transcendent about your work. And I don't mean transcendent in I don't know what it is, and I don't think anybody can ever explain it, but, you know, even in photography, you can look at a photograph someone's done, and you go, wow. And you look at another photograph, and it's just a photograph. And you look at a painting, and you kind of go, oh, that's a nice painting. And you look at a painting that has something, and I've seen that in your paintings. In your painting, I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's God in the painting. I don't know what
right.
it is, but whatever it is, you get it sometimes. You know, it just is. The whole is more than the sum of its parts.
Right.
Do you see that happen in your work?
I try for that to happen, and I think in order for that to happen, you have to have faith in your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have to get to a point where you feel like, okay, I'm a pretty good painter. So then you do something that's kind of not what you're normally doing, and you go, I feel it, but I'm seeing something that's telling me that's not right. You know,
yeah.
You shouldn't be doing that for a good painting.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so you have to have faith, and you trust yourself, and you say, I'm going to leave it. And then often, those paintings are the ones that the sum of the parts.
So at some point, painting no longer is an intellectual process.
For me, painting is not an intellectual process.
But it's not an emotional process either.
No.
You know, can you even talk about that?
I guess
I mean,
I'm very curious.
Is the word intuitive, maybe? I don't know.
I'm a curious
person.
I'm curious,
makes it sound
right?
Simple and easy.
It's tough. You know, I remember I've always had a hard time with art and critical theory. I have a hard time. Like, I feel like philosophers,
right.
Everyone's always saying art's dying.
There's a disconnect there somewhere.
Thank God it's kind of quit. People aren't saying art's dying anymore. But when I went to art school in the 80s, art was dying.
Art was dying.
And I felt like...
Oh, no. Art's dying
art's
again.
Art's dying. But I feel like art's kind of painting is pretty strong again, which is nice. But I feel like people that were saying art was dying usually were coming at art from a philosophical point of view, and they weren't feeling it. So,
right.
If you know, I feel like art will stop dying.
Maybe art criticism was dying.
Yeah. Maybe art criticism was dying.
That's what was happening.
Something was happening, you know, and obviously people just kept painting and painting, and there's a need. There seems to be a need for some people, a lot of people, to paint. It helps us solve things that we're looking at, like helps make sense of what we're looking at.
And, what do you mean?
Well, I guess when I see something and I think, oh, that's kind of an extraordinary thing I'm seeing, and it would make me feel empty just to not address it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel if I make a drawing and then I make a painting,
so part of being alive,
part of
seeing
being alive.
It, experiencing
yeah,
it, expressing
it. Yeah,
yeah.
And I think as an artist,
and that almost validates an existence. In a
yeah,
way.
And plus, it's, you're always by yourself making art.
Right.
It's difficult to get in there and for me and collaborate with other artists. I don't know. I was always in the shed painting by myself, painting the paintings. I didn't play sports. I wish that I did. So I didn't do team things. So I think, you know, you're always doing this as solo activity, and it's nice to do something. And then once you make the painting, suddenly everyone can participate because everyone can look at
it. Oh,
interesting. And tell you whether they like it or they don't like
it. That's true, yeah.
So suddenly your individual activity has now become more of a group thing or at least, you know, I don't know. It's like showing a painting, you know, if you write a book, you want people to read the book. And
Yeah, it is interesting. It's sort of like a flower.
I think it's an
interaction.
All
this germination takes place in the deep, dark,
right.
damp soil, and then it sort of sprouts itself,
right.
and then all of a sudden one day, bam. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, take a look at this.
Right.
Where has this taken you in terms of professionally? Because one of the things I talk to people about is, you know, the fact that in this country, generally artists don't make a lot of money.
Right.
Are you able to make a living doing this?
No, I make half my living, and the other half is just various odd jobs that I've been able to line up over the years. So, which actually is nice because my odd jobs take the pressure off of coming up with the amount of money every month. Mm-hmm. So I can actually not sell any paintings in a month and, you know, I don't feel like, I don't have enough money for the rent.
And that whole ego thing of being a success or being successful or that's just not a big issue for you.
No, it's not.
Really?
It used to be. I used to really, really want to, I really wanted to get recognition. I really wanted to, you know, show in a New York gallery. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, you know, and then I've been fortunate enough to have some success, you know, galleries. I've had some nice shows and some nice things have been written about me. And then suddenly I realized it was really interesting that I didn't feel any different. You know, it was just as hard after a success to go in the studio, start a new painting.
Yeah.
And it was just as hard. And it was just as hard to sell the painting when it was done or show the painting. Every time you make a new painting, people, you know, they want to see, I'm not a famous artist, right? People aren't just going to show my work because it's mine. They're going to say, show me what you're doing, Andy. If I like it, I'll show it. You know, I'll try to sell it. So I feel like, which is good because I don't think I want to get to the point where I can just make things and people want them because, you know, I don't know. I would feel confused and lost again.
Why?
Because it would be sort of a false validation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the real mission here is for you to explore your world, to investigate it, to try and represent it, capture it, express it, and then share it. And if all of a sudden you've got someone on top of you who's saying, you know, I love your work, I want to sell it for, you know, $150,000 a painting, how many can you make by next week? Changes the process a bit?
Well, I think that the man, the woman or the man who's saying that wouldn't change the process. I think what might change the process is then you have that show and then nothing sells. You know, that could make you feel a little funky. You know, I find it's hard. I don't make art well under pressure.
Uh-huh.
So I'm constantly working. I always work like I have a show coming up in a couple months.
Right.
And I go through a lot of paintings. I make a lot of paintings. I get rid of a lot of paintings. I paint out a lot of paintings.
Right.
So I probably have about, you know, 40% of my work gets painted out, sanded down.
Really?
Because something else comes back on top.
So one last thing here. We're running out of time,
believe
it or not. But I think we just sort of touched on it. And some people, I think that artists just sort of get up and go in the studio and have fun.
Right.
Art's fun.
Yeah.
And it's done by crazy people who have fun.
Right.
Not true, huh?
I have to say that I think some people are do treat it that way and make good stuff. You know,
really?
I think it's a unique experience, and that's why it's so hard to go to art school and come out and, you know, what do you do? It's so difficult to find out what to do. And I think each successful artist that I've ever read about has had a unique path that they followed, a totally unique path.
Yeah.
You can get pointers. People can guide you in the right direction, put you in contact with a few people, but ultimately you're on your own. And you got to figure it out. You got to make it happen.
So it is a journey.
It's a journey.
And it seems like an enormously important journey to you.
It seems to me.
Could you stop?
I mean, I have a wife and two children. If we were going hungry, I'd stop.
Right.
But fortunately, I have somehow I seem to be plugging along, and every month we got enough. You know, so as long as the next couple months look good, I'm going on.
I want to thank you, Andras.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you, folks, for tuning into Zero Hour. I hope you've enjoyed our lunch together. Look forward to seeing you next Friday at 12:30. This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM. It's indie radio. It's radio for the rest of us. One last thing before we go. If you'd like to see Andras Baladi's work, you can go to www.andrasbality.com and see some of his paintings. Hope to see you on the radio next week. Bye-bye.